Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We have another recent graduate with us, this time a high school graduate. Nina Lavizos-Tikopoulos graduated from City High in Iowa City this spring. The Little Hawk newspaper was an important part of her high school experience, and in her senior year, she did an extraordinary piece of investigative journalism. She investigated the racial breakdown of detention and suspension rates at her high school. Her investigation uncovered a significant disparity. She won a Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award for her work, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Nina.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So let's go back to the beginning for you. Tell me how you got involved with journalism in high school.
So journalism really just fit into kind of like a variety of my interests. I enjoyed writing. I'm a huge people person. I just love talking to people. And I really found, I think, my place in my school. I would spend every morning, lunch, you know, afternoon in the journalism room. And it was just a really awesome community for me to be a part of.
So it started out as a great place to fit in and learn. Was there a sort of a galvanizing moment for you where you thought, you know, I really, really could do something with this?
Yeah, I think that once I've also been involved with activism, and once I kind of like realized that I'm not very interested in politics as a career, but I like talking about it and writing about it, I think that really solidified the pursuit of journalism for me, because it was really a nice way for me to be able to kind of bring attention to the topics I was passionate about without being involved with politics directly. And I think that was really my realization of why it was so interesting to me.
You took a course on social justice your senior year of high school. Tell me about that course.
So that class was an ethnic studies class, which me and some of my fellow students petitioned our school board to create. And it was a long process. We had to go to many school board meetings, you know, try and get money for it, et cetera. And it finally actually became a thing my senior year. And it was really interesting for me to finally learn a kind of actual, like, more accurate information about Black history and LGBT rights, et cetera. And one of the things we learned about in that class was the school-to-prison pipeline, which was the inspiration for this piece.
For people who don't know about the school-to-prison pipeline, explain to me a little bit of what you learned.
So what I learned about the school-to-prison pipeline was basically there are various institutions in the U.S. that, you know, oppress Black people. And this was one that really impacts Iowa specifically and impacts Black children. So throughout elementary school, high school, Black students and various students of color are suspended and arrested more than their white peers. And this puts them kind of away from the educational system and forces them into the justice system, the criminal justice system. And it's kind of a way for the U.S. to push Black students outside of education and into prisons. And it's very horrific, especially in Iowa. We have large discrepancies between races, and we're one of the worst states in the nation for Black to white disparities in prisons.
Given the population in the state, a much higher percentage of Black Iowans are in prison than white Iowans.
Yeah.
So you live in Iowa City, and there are some assumptions that people make about Iowa City. We know that it is a multicultural community, so it has larger minority populations than many of the other cities and towns in Iowa. It's also considered to be a liberal bastion in Iowa.
Yes.
So was there part of you, when you were thinking about looking into this at your school, was there part of you that thought, oh, not here. It can't happen here.
Well, I think it was really startling for me to kind of find the numbers that I found and have the discussions I had, because though I am aware that, you know, racism is everywhere, I do also believe that Iowa City is one of the most liberal places in Iowa, but it doesn't make it an exception to this school-to-prison pipeline. And I think it really made sense to me in the end that this was so prevalent in my high school, because it's a very sneaky way for white administrators and politicians to kind of have that racism in the system, but not have it very obvious to the community. No one is going to think much of Black students getting suspended. And so it was startling, but in the end, it kind of made sense. It was very fitting, I think.
So tell me about your investigation. How did you go about trying to figure out whether or not Black students in your high school were getting punished at higher levels?
Mm-hmm. So first, I kind of wanted to research the school-to-prison pipeline on a more national and statewide level. I found some statistics and ACLU reports on this topic, and tried to kind of educate myself more on what this system actually was. And then I found some data from the school district about my specific community in how many Black students were suspended, how many white students, Asian students, et cetera. And that really showed to me that this was a huge problem within my school district. And with those numbers, I kind of did some, you know, one-on-one interviews with white students and Black students about their experiences with similar activities, white students getting caught with smoking weed and having no repercussions, Black students being suspended, et cetera. And I kind of tried to find those specific stories and also gather the data on a district-wide level.
In talking with your fellow students, what was that experience like for you? You uncovered some really difficult stories.
Mm-hmm. It was really startling, I think, because these are people that I had always been in school with. And one of the interviews I did, it was someone who I remembered having classes with in junior high, but they had kind of disappeared in high school. And little did I know they were actually, you know, in juvie. So some of those realizations were kind of difficult to wrap my head around, the idea that my school experience was so different than my Black peers, and that they had just been through so much at such a young age, when I have the privilege of, you know, learning about it and not actually experiencing that torture from their educational institution. So it was quite emotional.
When you were talking earlier about the school to prison pipeline, you said a sneaky way for white administrators to perpetuate this system. And I'm curious about that. I mean, you obviously interviewed administrators. Did you mm-hmm. come away with a sense that this was intentional?
No, it's definitely not intentional. I think that it's, most of the time, it's a very implicit thing. You know, no, I don't think any white administrators in my school district are purposefully perpetuating the school to prison pipeline, but it is happening. And I think I saw a lot of white fragility and defensiveness on behalf of those administrators, because they were very adamant that they were not racist, that they were not doing anything wrong, that there were no disproportionalities in the data, but that's really not the case. So I think that honestly, this is just kind of a wake up call to these people who thought they were doing everything right, that they still have those biases and they're still doing, in the end, pretty racist things, even if it's not, you know, if they're not meant to do that.
Tell us what your data did show. People, of course, can read your article from The Little Hawk online. And you've been written about in The New York Times and all over the place lately. But tell us what your research actually uncovered.
I think that it really just showed that there's so much more that needs to be done in the Iowa City Community School District. There are some projects going underway with implicit bias training, et cetera. They're always trying to hire more teachers of color, but it's really not doing anything, because I found that, you know, Black students are 20% of my district's population, but they're 60% of the suspensions, which is actually more than the national rate of disproportional suspensions. And that's really sad, especially since Iowa City is thought of as this liberal, welcoming place. And I think that it really just proves that no matter if you think, even if you think you're living in this liberal safe haven, there's still those racist undertones in the educational system.
You came up with the statistics looking at suspension rates, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So Black students receive 60% of the suspensions, and they make up 20% of the district population. But as I mentioned, you did a lot of interviews with people. So you then illustrated those statistics with some experiences that students had had outside of school as well. You start with a story about, and the names of these students have been changed, but you used the name Malcolm. Yeah. He was playing with a BB gun. He was with two friends. They were white. He was Black. They shot at a shed. When the cops came, Malcolm ended up serving 17 months in juvenile detention, and his friends served no time. So you took outside experiences to work into this article. Do you feel like it's those outside experiences that maybe pose a greater threat to these students than what they're experiencing inside the school?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're actually quite related to each other, because while the reason that happened wasn't directly because of, you know, school or a suspension, it is it's associated with the fact that Malcolm's schools had been suspending him and putting him outside of school. He had been spending more time with his friends that may have been suspended too. You know, it's this like displacement of these students when they aren't in school. They don't have things to do. They're kids, you know, like not adults yet. And I think that's a really easy position to kind of get into trouble. So that's a huge part of the school to prison pipeline too, is just having that time by yourself kind of makes you more prone to, I think, getting caught, especially if you're Black. I think the police are kind of like looking for that, in my opinion.
Now, by receiving this Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award, of course, that has raised the profile of your article dramatically. It's been read by many more people than would normally read an article in a school newspaper. What do you hope to come out of this?
I hope that, I honestly hope that just like my high school changes some things. I hope that we have more Black teachers. And I hope that my white peers and are just more aware of these troubles and this adversity that Black students have to go through, because I do think it was quite shocking. I had like discussions with people, even some of my Black friends, who were kind of startled by the intensity of the data and just how big of a problem this actually was. So I hope that it just kind of starts the conversation more and hopefully brings around some change and makes the school district a little better for Black individuals.
This award and attention also, of course, came at this moment where so many people are talking about racial justice in our country. So that must feel a little strange to be in a spotlight like this at the moment. What's the experience been like for you?
I think it's been kind of weird. I've never been one that's very fond of attention, and especially in this moment where I think that Black voices should be being elevated more than anyone else, I feel like I'm in a little bit of a weird position to be receiving this award and this money for, you know, Black student stories. And I wanted to, you know, use my privilege as a white woman to write the article and elevate their voices. But I do feel a little bit weird about it. I just hope that it's really bringing change, because I think this moment should really be about listening to Black people more than anyone.
What is next for you? Congratulations on graduating from high school in the strangest year ever to graduate from high school. So what comes next?
Next year, hopefully, I will be going to Barnard College in New York City, which is not guaranteed to happen on campus yet, but I'm hoping that I will be, you know, moving across the country and starting a new experience.
You are just starting your college career. What do you think you want to do?
I think that I definitely want to pursue journalism. I want to work on my college newspaper. I'm also very interested in education as a topic, specific and like nonprofit organizations, but I'm really going to see where I think college takes me. I'm planning to major in human rights, which I think will kind of encompass my interests pretty well. So I want to like look into journalism if there are jobs that I can even apply for. But yeah, I'm kind of just seeing where the next years will take me.
Right. Well, that's where everybody is right now.
Yeah.
to some degree or another. And receiving this award, I assume that usually would have come with maybe a trip and a big banquet. Mm-hmm. But what was the awarding ceremony like this year?
It was an online ceremony, which is not the same. My journalist advisor was very sad that I'm not able to go to D.C. and go to the Kennedy Ball, which would have been cool. But my award was presented online by Katie Couric, which was very fancy and exciting. So it was different. I mean, everything is online now, but it still felt special.
Well, Nina, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Nina Livizos-Dekopoulos graduated from City High in Iowa City this spring. She investigated the racial breakdown of detention and suspension rates at her high school. Her investigation uncovered a significant disparity that was published in her school newspaper, but it has earned her national acclaim. She won a Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award for her work. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. And we also always want to hear from you. Drop us a line at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.